This is something of the silence that David cries about. The silence of God. Psalm 13. I'd like to read it again so that you experience again the force of the phrases, the terseness of the language, the anger. Phrase after phrase piled up his accusation against God into this silent space. He cries out, "Oh Lord, how long will you forget me? Forever? How long will you look the other way? How long must I struggle with anguish in my soul, with sorrow in my heart every day? How long will my enemy have the upper hand? Turn and answer me, O Lord my God. Restore the sparkle to my eyes, or I will die. Don't let my enemies gloat, saying, 'We have defeated him.' Don't let them rejoice at my downfall. But I trust in your unfailing love. I will rejoice because you have rescued me. I will sing to the Lord because he is good to me." We'll ask God to bless this reading, his holy and inspired word. If you're here today and you're sitting next to a box of one of these in the pew, just hold it up high. Do you have one by you? Look at that. Look around the room. Boxes of Kleenex everywhere. Sometimes people come for the very first time as a guest or a visitor here, and they'll notice the Kleenex boxes in the pews. That's one of the things that I hear comments about from time to time. Maybe you've noticed it, but you haven't commented. This morning, what I'd like to suggest to you is that having a box of Kleenex in each pew is a theological statement. It tells a theological story. This is just as theologically important as having a pulpit, or having a communion table, or having a baptismal font. And this morning I'm going to tell you why. To understand why we have to have Kleenex in church, to understand why we have to have tears in church, to understand why we come to church and grieve sometimes, we need to understand about the Psalms of Lament. The Psalms of Lament move us into this place of darkness and chaos, this place where we seem to have been abandoned by God. It's a place that isn't manipulated to create some emotional response, but it's simply a place expressing the reality that we experience. If you listen to Psalm 13, you might say, well, that seems like a rare psalm. That seems like a particularly hard-edged collection of words that doesn't necessarily give full expression to what we would normally find in the Psalter. But that just simply isn't reality. The Psalter is filled with songs and prayers of lament. Psalm 10, just a few psalms prior to this one. "Why, O Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble?" In other words, just when I need you most, you're gone. When was the last time you said a prayer like that? Psalm 22, we've looked at previously. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me? So far from the words of my groaning? Oh my God, I cry out by day, but you don't answer. By night, and you're silent. Do you remember who prayed that prayer? One Friday afternoon, hanging from a cross? Psalm 42. As the deer pants for streams of water, so my soul pants for you, O God. My soul thirsts for God. For the living God. When can I go and meet with God? My tears have been my food day and night. That's a lot of tears. Psalm 88 is perhaps one of the bleakest. I cry to you for help, O Lord. In the morning, my prayer comes before you. Why, O Lord, do you reject me and hide your face from me? That sense of anguish, being rejected by God himself. These are earthy psalms, coarse language, difficult words. And they're psalms that try to take the world seriously. They try to take the world as it really is, as we really experience it. As we think about these psalms of lament, Frankly, these are one of the collections of psalms in the Psalter that tend to turn people off to the psalms. We try to avoid this kind of language. In some aspects, because we try to avoid the pain that they express. We're, by nature, pain-avoidant creatures. But that's one of the very reasons that we need to have these psalms. We need to have lament. As we deal with these psalms of lament over the next few weeks, we just need to be very honest about sometimes an assumption that works its way into the church. Mary Beth has already alluded to the assumption that has been worked out in the Christian music publishing industry. There's this assumption among us that somehow crying and complaining and lamenting to God are signs of a poor faith or a weak faith. That if you have a strong faith, if you just believe enough, then you wouldn't have to lament and you wouldn't be sad and you wouldn't have to cry out. Right? Good Christians are happy Christians. If you have a strong faith, you're in a good mood. Good Christians are always supposed to be upbeat. This is the message that gets conveyed. And so we think somehow that it's a weakness, that it's a sign of failing faith if we have to lament before God, or if we come to God with our complaints. Maybe we feel like God hasn't given us permission to say those kinds of things. That God says to us, "Who do you think you are?" when we come to Him, and He doesn't give us the permission to weep before Him, or to feel pain, or to lament, or to cry. That He maybe is offended by it if we have to reach for a Kleenex in the pew. Churches that create this atmosphere then often become places where people engage in mass denial, in a cover-up, really. It's a cover-up, a world of pretending. It's a world of pretending that places like the Gaza Strip don't exist, or that Flight 17 never happened. Or that typhoons don't strike. We become places where we're led to believe that we always have to be happy, we have to always be willing to sing happy songs and upbeat tunes and celebrate the goodness of God, always praise, always giving thanks, no matter what. We're supposed to be strong people. But the reality is that while lament may be judged by some to be signs of unfaith or failure, for God's people, I'd like to suggest that lament is actually a sign of tremendously strong faith. It's a bold and rigorous and courageous faith. It's a faith that's strong enough to say, look, my faith doesn't have to pretend. I don't have to make believe that the world is somehow different than it really is. I don't have to ignore the brokenness. I don't have to set aside the pain, the failure, or the hurt. We don't have to act and play with one another. We don't have to worry that somebody's going to think we're not good enough if we come to church and somebody recognizes by the dark circles around our eyes or the tears on our cheeks that everything isn't okay all the time. A faith that says, I don't have to pretend before you, and I don't have to pretend before God. A lamenting faith, the faith of the forgotten, is a faith that can say to God, God, if you're in this, then I'm in this all the way. And there's nothing that's off limits, nothing that I won't say to you, nothing that I will hide, nothing that I'll hold back, nothing is out of bounds. But it's still faith. This is still address to God. This is still word addressed to a God who is assumed to be a faithful God. In other words, we need these laments. We need these laments. We need them deeply. We need them because we live in a world that is filled with pain and brokenness and sorrow. There's so much pain. There's physical pain and emotional pain and relational pain. Spiritual pain, there's your pain, there's your friend's pain, there's the pain that we see on the screen of the news, the pain that we see around us. Pain is real. But this real pain is not expressed merely as a form of complaint. It's not just ventilating. It isn't just getting out all of our bad feelings. This is always done, this lament, this recognition of pain, this hurt, is always done in this context of trust. We express our pain and we raise our questions and we give vent to our feelings of abandonment in a context that says, I know that God exists. I know that he loves me. I know that he cares for me. I know that he will unfailingly provide for me. And it's because I know all of this. It's because my faith can handle this that I can express to him as honestly and rawly and genuinely and authentically as I do. It's as if we come to God and we say, look, God, there are a lot of people in the world, there are a lot of people in my life that I'm not comfortable enough with for them to see all of who I am. I don't trust them enough to say these things. But you, God, I trust completely. And to you, I will say everything that is to be said. Things that I can't say to anybody else. And so Psalm 13 takes its place in this great tradition of lament. This great tradition of robust but honest faith that sees the world as it really is and sees God as he really is and wrestles between the two. Psalm 13 is not a long psalm. It's one of the shortest lament psalms. But as you've already experienced, in its brevity, there's a tremendous amount of power. It's packed with words that almost seem grating and harsh. Words that maybe some of us are even uncomfortable saying to God. Accusing God of forgetting his own people or of turning away from them. Maybe we even wonder if words like this should be in the Bible at all. We say very seldomly to God, right? Are you going to forget me forever? Are you so incompetent at being God that you can't take care of my life? It's the message of Psalm 13 addressed to God. How long are you going to hide from me? How long are you going to let your enemy, my enemies, triumph over me? What's fascinating about this Psalm of David is that we don't know exactly the circumstance that David is facing when he pens these words. We don't know which one of his trials or struggles he's going through, and we're not told what it is that he's facing or who his enemy is or even what his enemy is. Some have speculated that the enemy he's facing is death or the enemy that he's facing is sickness or illness. It could be another person. It could be somebody whom he loved but has betrayed him. We're not told what David is facing here. And maybe in some ways it's best that we're not told, because then this becomes a psalm that anybody can pray no matter what we're facing. Whatever our moment of pain is, or our ambivalence, or our doubt, or our confusion, anybody can take these words into any circumstance and cry out to God, how long, Lord, will you hide yourself from me? It takes only a few minutes to walk through the psalm carefully and to lay it next to your own experiences and my own experiences of disappointment and lament. And we can see immediately where this lament comes from. It comes from a place of pain. The first cause of lament is pain. It could be physical pain. It could be a moment of emotional pain or mental pain or spiritual pain. It's pain that gives rise to lament. It's pain that we experience when life isn't doing what we wanted it to do, when life isn't turning out how we wanted it to turn out, when the course of life takes a sudden turn in the road, when there are unanticipated developments. There's pain that comes when we are diagnosed with cancer, when the job goes away, when there's a betrayal, when there's a divorce. Excruciating pain. And we all know what that is. And then there's a delay. This pain doesn't go away. This isn't a pain that goes away because you've taken a couple of extra strength Tylenol and laid down for a few moments. This is a pain that goes on and on. Maybe it goes on month after month, or maybe even year after year. How long, O Lord, is his cry, is his plea. The Israelites cried out to God in their slavery in Egypt. Do you remember how many years they were in slavery? 430, right? 400 years in slavery. How long, Lord? How many generations died with that prayer on their lips? It just didn't change. Job cries out, how long? He wonders if God has walked away from him and abandoned him. And all through the chapters of the book of Job, nothing changes. And in fact, if anything changes, it's only getting worse. How long, O Lord? How long do I have to wait for you to intervene? Paul cried out about his thorn in the flesh, a thorn that was never taken away as far as we know. And he called it a messenger of Satan because it was an ongoing affliction that never changed. There's pain that never changes. It seems as if it will never go away. What is yours? What circumstance in your life do you look at and you say, that just doesn't change? It never changes. I've wrestled with it. I've prayed for it. I've asked God about it. I've brought it to God more times than I can count or keep track of. But it just goes on and on and on. And it never stops. And there's no solution on the horizon. And I don't know what to do. How long, O Lord? And that leads to this third cause of lament. Not only is there a moment of pain, not only is there a delay in the change of circumstances, but when I cry out to God to change the circumstances, it is as if God doesn't answer my prayer. That pain of unanswered prayer that we all know so well. And we can play word games, right? Has anybody ever done this to you when you've said, God just isn't answering my prayer? And this word game is something like this. Well, God always answers prayers. Sometimes he answers it this way, and sometimes it's this way. Sometimes it's yes, and sometimes it's not yet, and sometimes it's just no. And so there's your answer. But when you're in that place of pain, and the prayer that you're praying is, God, rescue me, save me, heal me, and there's no salvation in sight, word games just don't cut it. Where are you, God? This is the position that David is in. This is what he's wrestling with. It's almost a crisis of faith, this unanswered prayer. He's been praying for something for some time now, and God isn't answering him. Will you forget me forever, he says. How long will you hide your face from me? You may be experiencing that right now. You may be in a place where it seems as if God has silenced his answers to you. And if you're not there right now, you have been in the past, and I have bad news for you. If you haven't been before, you will be at some point in the future. And we all certainly know somebody who stands there today. And when you get into a situation like that, when you get into a place where life just seems to be overwhelming and God is silent and your prayers are not answered, you can even come to a point of saying, I wonder what the point is anymore. Why do I even bother to pray? Praying might not even be worth it. Can you be honest enough with God to say that to him? Can you enter into the spirit of the psalm of lament? And then that brings us to this fourth cause, this fourth layer of lament, this sense of abandonment. It isn't just that God isn't answering my prayer, but the sense that God has actually abandoned me. Now we know that God never abandons his own. We know intellectually that God is faithful. We know that God never walks away. And David knew that too. David had his theology down. But in the circumstance, in the moment, in the pain, it doesn't feel that way. We don't experience God as being faithful. And in that moment, when we don't experience the presence of God, for us, it may be just as well that God has actually abandoned us. The difference between the two seems so slim. Will you forget me forever? Will you hide your face from me? This is the lived experience of David. Don't flinch from this. Don't turn away from it. Don't rationalize it away. David says, my experience in life is that God has abandoned me. Do you know where these words come from? Don't hide your face from me. It comes from Numbers chapter 11, where we find the great priestly benediction for God's people. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord cause his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face towards you and give you peace. They're all synonyms. God's face shining on you, God turning his face towards you, is the equivalent of the Lord blessing you and being good to you and giving you grace and peace. The Hebrew people had this idea that when the face of the Lord was turned in your direction, when the smile of God was on you, it was a sign of God's acceptance of you. It was a sign of his blessing. It was a sign that God was identifying with his people. And the worst thing that you could possibly experience would be the reversal of that, would be God hiding his face, God turning away. And we have some experience of that. We know what it is sometimes, don't we? When something has broken in your relationship and you stand before your spouse and you're so ashamed that you can't even make eye contact. That's the impulse of God turning his face away. Or you know that you've been so angry or so upset or so hurt by somebody that you can't even bring yourself to look at them. God turns his face away. He can't even look at his people. And it's as if his blessings and his goodness and his identification with his people have been taken away. And that's David's fear. David's fear is real. He really is afraid that God has abandoned him, that God no longer is blessing him. And that may be just about the worst thing that anybody can experience. Except perhaps the fifth and final cause of lament. The final layer of lament here is that in the midst of all of this, there are these doubts that creep into our mind. There are these doubts that say, how long do I have to wrestle with my thoughts? In verse 2 in one translation, how long do I have to have sorrow in my heart every single day? And your mind begins to struggle with these things. And there's a dissonance between what you thought you knew and what you actually experience. And when we have that dissonance, we begin to have questions and doubts, and we wonder if we really know what we thought we knew and if what we thought we knew is really true at all. The only thing worse than feeling abandoned by God is coming to the place of wondering if there even is a God. Maybe this whole thing is a hoax. Maybe prayer is never answered. Maybe everything is a rationalization in a game that we've slipped into. These are terrible experiences. David is being really honest with these words. And he's saying there are some disturbing realities in the world and in our lives and in our own minds that we just have to recognize and live with. There are times that life is hard, even for children of God. There are no quick solutions. There's no easy fixes. There's no drive-through that you can go into and get everything back on track in 30 seconds. You begin to wonder if prayer works, if God is listening, if God is there. And maybe you're still uncomfortable with that kind of language. Maybe you're uncomfortable looking at a psalm that expresses this level of lament. But we can remind ourselves that this is a psalm of David, and David was known as a man after God's own heart. David was a man who was an outstanding example of what humanity is supposed to be before God. He's the king of Israel. He's the father of the Messiah. And he doesn't cover up these dark places, these broken places. But he doesn't stop with them either. He doesn't stop with his lament, with his complaint, with his doubt. The psalm doesn't stall there, but it begins to move again. Not quickly, not glibly, not easily, but slowly. It begins to grind forward in a different direction. After repeating his lament four times, how long, how long, how long, how long? Four times. The psalmist is making it clear that unless something changes, I'm going to die. And if I die, my enemies are going to rejoice. And if my enemies rejoice, God, you're going to look like a fool in their eyes because you haven't even taken care of your own. He expresses his lament. And then it's as if his anger and his frustration and his fear and his despair, once fully expressed, allows him to come to this place of waiting. And after verse 4, I want you to imagine that there's just a pause there. After verse 4, it's as if everything just stops. It goes silent. And he waits. We don't have any idea how long he waits. We don't know how long he waits in this darkness, how long he waits and sits with the silence, having expressed everything to God that he can possibly express. Walter Brueggemann, who has been informing a lot of our thinking along the way, puts it really well. He said, it seems like you have to wait until hell freezes over. And it may be that long. But there must be that wait. Because there's no court of higher appeal. There's no higher authority to hear your complaint. God has heard the lament. And then we wait. And then in verse 5, did you feel the difference? It's almost jarring. In verse 5, something changes. Something dramatically changes. And we don't know how it changes, or when it changes, or why it changes. We just know that it changes. And so Psalm 13 is not a prescription. It's not a pattern to follow, a list of things to do so that you can get over your lamenting. It's not a pattern. It's a promise. It's a promise that says after the waiting, no matter how long the waiting is, after the waiting, then something is different. God speaks. There's a word of encouragement. There's a glimmer of light. Some hope is restored. Verse 5 begins with the word but. But. Even though all of this is true, even though God seems silent and distant, even though God seems to have abandoned me, even though my enemies are getting ready to gloat over me, even though all of this is true, but. Nevertheless, I will trust in your unfailing love. It's a statement of trust right in the middle of nowhere. The tense of that verb is completed action. It's as if he just simply goes back and says, I decided to trust you once, and I'm going to continue trusting you. I'm going to put all of my cards on you. The trusting has already happened, even though the circumstances have not yet changed. And this trusting will lead to rejoicing and singing. And the verbs for rejoicing and singing are in the future tense. The trusting has already happened, and because I've already trusted, and even though the circumstances haven't changed, I know that there will come a time when I will rejoice and I will sing a new song. The pain will end, the answer will come, the lament will have completed its work in us, and we will sing a new song. And so we express our lament. Raw and honest. No holds barred. And then after we lament, we hold on. See, a Christian lament is never an expression of wanting to walk away from God. We raise our hard questions, our objections, our complaints. We argue, we doubt. But when this broken world presses in on us, we hold on. And in spite of the fact that the pain is still here, we go ahead. In spite of the fact that there is no easy solution, we go ahead. In spite of the fact that there are no quick or easy answers to our prayers, we go ahead. In spite of the fact that the circumstances make no sense at all, we go ahead. Because we know that God holds us. He holds us in the name of Jesus Christ, who himself went ahead, even when he was faced with the reality of God turning his face away from him, even when he was faced with the cross and a tomb. Jesus Christ went ahead even into the silence of the grave. And he went ahead right into new life. That's the promise of lament. The promise of lament is that somehow and somewhere God draws near to the raw honesty of your prayer and you find the strength to hold on until the new life comes. Amen.